RicFlair.com presents 2 Cents Worth, a podcast on B2B sales and entrepreneurship. The one podcast that's not afraid to discuss real sales strategies with real entrepreneurs that produce real results. Every day I'm hustling. Here's your host, James Harper.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? Welcome back to the 2 Cents Worth podcast. I'm your host, James Harper. Let me ask you a quick question. What do you think it's like being a shy kid with braces, just entering the real world, getting a door-to-door sales job, and then finding out you can sell in one summer $100,000 worth of residential paint jobs? Then fast forward 10 years, and next thing you know, you are being a sales trainer for 150 sales reps at Zoom. Today, we get to speak with one of my favorite B2B outbound thought leaders, Jason Bay. Jason's insight is just second to none, in my opinion. I love his approach to outbound sales. He's a thought leader in the B2B world, and we're going to really dive into some trends you can implement right away when it comes to your outbound sales. We're going to talk about how the sales culture among sales teams really actually hasn't changed over the last decade and what maybe you could do to improve it amongst your team. And then last but not least is putting more visuals that actually mean something, not just graphics, visuals, data in your cold outreach, a good idea or not. Guys, you're going to love this episode with Jason Bay. So without any further ado, please welcome Jason Bay with Blissful Prospecting.
Hey, Jason, thanks for joining me today. How you doing?
You bet, man. I'm doing good. Like we talked about, this is like the last call of the day for both of us. So we got to end with a bang.
Yes, absolutely. Got to end with a bang and with a strong note, the whole nine yards. Jason, I'm super pumped to have you on our show today. I was mentioning to you before the call that there's really a handful of people in the B2B outbound world that I follow closely and I just think produce top-notch content. You're one of those thought leaders. I love the content you produce. I love your approach. I look forward to learning more. So with all that being said, why don't we just start with, like, what's the story of Jason Bay? Like, how did you get into sales and where did you... Or how did you get to where you're at now?
Yeah. I mean, I got into sales by accident, like most people, they get into sales. So when I was 18 in high school, I wanted to be a forensic scientist. So that's what I went to school for at first. And I remember sitting in the classes and then going to an actual like criminology lab. This is in Southern Oregon. And there's like two forensic scientists in the entire state of Oregon. And you sit in a lab all day. And I'm an introverted man, but that was like way too introverted for me. I thought it would be like CSI where you're like kicking down doors and like shooting people. I didn't want to shoot anyone, but, analyzing evidence and doing all that stuff. And someone just came into my classroom and talked about this company, College Works Painting. And they're like, yeah, run a house painting business over the summer, make 10,000 bucks for school. And I stacked wood on a cart 60 hours a week the summer prior to make money for school. So I was like, I'll do anything besides that because I just hated that. And I went really well. I didn't even really know I'd be going door to door. There was like a whole, like their sales training was really good. So I hired like other high school kids and my friends to help me go door to door. I learned how to do sales. The average paint job's like between $3,000 and $6,000. You know, so I'm a 19-year-old kid with braces selling. And I ended up selling like $100,000 worth of paint jobs in a summer, making 27 grand for school. And I was like, dude, I love sales, right? Like, this is awesome. And that kind of started everything in 2008. Throughout the rest of college, I became a sales manager for them. So then I, found my passion for like coaching and like training people and that sort of stuff. And then I spent a couple years as their marketing director. And a big thing I did there was helping them put in like an outbound call center. So that's how I got into call centers. And that brings us up to like 2014, where I decided to leave them. I was like, I want to consult and help other companies. And then for 2 or 3 years, I was, doing consulting projects. And then we started Blissful Prospecting in 2017 to like really like kind of narrow in on prospecting. Because as you know, I mean, this is your line of work too. I think everyone kind of knows they should be doing more prospecting and everyone kind of hates it, right? So it's like one of those things, how do we do cold outreach in a way that doesn't feel yucky and salesy? And how do we do it in a way where we can start conversations with people? And then how do we do it in a way that's like sustainable? Where we don't dread this activity, on a regular basis. So that's the summary of my career, man.
That's awesome. I love that. And I think that's, I think you started it off like most people, that we accidentally fall into sales. I like to say I was not the 10-year-old kid that raised my hand in class saying, oh, I'm going to be in outbound sales. I would have like thrown up on myself at that thought, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, and you know, like so many others, going door to door, I always say people in the cold call world, they obviously cut their teeth with like working the phones and trying to set appointments. And I think that's, that can be a tough gig, especially depending on the culture you work in. But door to door sales is a different level of just like testing your comfort zone. I don't care who you are. You're the best salesperson, sales guru in the world. Go door to door today and you're going to have your comfortability tested, which I think is so critical in sales.
Oh man. I mean, it desensitized me to rejection, you know, and dude, I was scared. Like I'd done like in, you know, high school, like a part of the basketball team, we had to go sell candy bars or something like that. But it's like, hey, I'm on the basketball team. You recognize me, right? I'm in a small town, 5,000 people. But you're totally right, man. I mean, like going door to door and selling something, I mean, people reject you to your face. People won't open the door and they'll look at you until you just to get off their doorstep. People will be like, dude, I'm eating dinner right now. You know, so there's just like all kinds of stuff like that. It really desensitizes you. Yeah, and I think that's like so important with rejection. I mean, there's a whole, you know, kind of framework that we walk through around call reluctance, but you know, a big part of it is just desensitizing yourself, you know? So if you make a habit of just asking for things, I honestly, like since I met my wife, like she's not afraid to ask for stuff. Like it's really helped me in this area too, in the last like 2 or 3 years, but not being afraid to like ask for a discount or for someone, ask someone to throw something extra in or sending your food back if you don't like it, you know, and saying, hey, you know, I kind of asked for this thing and like, you didn't do it. Like I would never say things like that, you know? So you kind of, like if you can work on desensitizing yourself in your personal life a little bit and being okay with hearing no from people, that's going to help you so much when you're on the phones.
I think that's actually, that's really well said. Just kind of that just numbing yourself to rejection. I used to have a boss. He told me something really interesting. He said, next time you go through Starbucks and ask for a discount, knowing that they're not going to give you a discount. And I looked at him crazy and I said, why? And he said, because you're going to learn how to get outside of your comfort zone and you're going to get to the point. You're going to say it really quick and say, and can I have a discount? Can I have 10% off on my latte? Right. Yeah. And then you're going to get a funny look and they're going to tell you no. And what good is, and then he used to say, what good is a person's yes if they can't say no? And that's always like stuck with me. Getting outside of your comfort zone, hearing the word no, getting used to rejection, and then getting to the point when we communicate. And I think in sales, often we use a lot of fancy words. We use a lot of filler words just to talk, and being okay with silence and being okay with direct communication is really critical. Jason, I'm really curious here. What would you say your general philosophy just on sales is?
Ooh, I've never been asked that before. I would say this concept of you first, me second, I think is so important. We have to remember, especially when we're doing outbound sales, that we are not an interruption. Like I don't identify as an interruption, but we are interrupting someone. So we are calling them, emailing them, reaching out to them on LinkedIn when they did not ask us to do that. So they didn't opt in. So we need to be thinking about them first and like what they need from the interaction. And then we can ask for what we need. This is like, I mean, it's so prevalent, especially in objection handling. You know, someone says not interested. Classic response. Well, hey, James, you know, I was actually working with another company and I, you know, they felt the same way. And what they found was when they actually sat down with me for 30 minutes, they found there was a lot of value and they ended up saving a lot of money. It was really, you know, it's like, okay, dude, whatever, you know, you didn't give that person what they need. You didn't acknowledge them. So when someone says not interested or, hey, we already have another provider, instead of like just sticking to pure logic and thinking to yourself, well, how could they not be interested? I didn't even tell them why I was calling. Like, you know, because people buy based on emotion and justify with logic, right? Turns out there's a lot of science supporting that. So I need to engage you emotionally and just acknowledge you, man. Someone says not interested. where's that probably coming from? Well, I probably caught them in the middle of something. It was unexpected, whatever it might be. So I'm just going to say that. Hey, James, I hear you, man. It sounds like I might've caught you in the middle of something. If that's the case, I understand why now might not be like the best time to take a random cold call from someone. Empathize, validate. And then we can go in for the what we want part of it and get them to opt into it. You know, but hey, would it hurt if I took 30 seconds? I could tell you why I'm calling. You could let me know if you want to keep chatting, right? I'm acknowledging you. And then I'm also in sales. We have this mental barrier where we think that we have to control the sale, right? If I give the prospect an opportunity to say no, well, they could say no, right? Versus like yes trapping, you know, Chris Voss has kind of popularized all this stuff. Like the yes trapping is like, even if the person says yes, that doesn't mean they're going to show up to the meeting that you scheduled if they felt like they were really pushed. So giving them a chance to like opt in and this you first, me second, it's like, dude, let me give the person what they need from this interaction first and like acknowledge them and have a tiny bit of empathy. And then I can go in and ask for like what I want.
I love that. I think that's really greatly said there. I always tell anyone that I'm working with, if you're going completely cold to a prospect and we're assuming that you're hitting the right person, that you actually have a solution that they might be looking for, call the elephant out of the room. And what I mean by that is, I remember I used to just pick up the phone and you might pick up and I'd say, hey, Jason, listen, I realize I'm calling you out of the blue. And I would start my cold calls with that. And when I did, and I wasn't following some like robotic script or going straight into a pitch, and I went off script and just said, hey, I realize I'm calling you out of the blue. I was wondering when a good time to meet would be. And just by doing that, it built such a layer of trust because it was genuine. It was just being very human and realizing like, hey, I don't really want to make this call, but I feel like I have to, or I feel like it could be a good connection. And I realize that you probably might not want to take that call. I mean, I get cold called all the time still, right? And I'm even like kind of like reserved to it as the consumer. So when we're on the other side of the fence, having that empathy is huge. Although empathy, I feel like in the sales world has became like a trendy word lately, which is very bizarre to me. But it's a true thing though, just really putting your prospect first. Jason, I'm curious, someone like you that lives in the cold outreach world, I feel like the outbound world, like the last 5 years has really became a thing. Before, people knew that they had to do it, but they were like scared to talk about it. They were like, we have to do some type of outbound sales, but like we're not either gonna publicly focus on it, and people weren't creating content around it. Just being in the outbound world, how have you seen it change like over the last 5-10 years?
I think that there's great question. I think that there is less of this attitude in general in sales around, I'm your manager, I'm your boss, you just got to do this. And there's this thing going on right now where, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 31. I'm technically considered a millennial. So when people say millennials just want the how-to, they just want to be told what to do. I'm like, no, I don't think that's the case, actually. For the first time in the last 10 years, there's so much information out there that if my boss tells me to make cold calls in a certain way and it doesn't work for me, I can go listen to a podcast like this or watch YouTube videos that tell me something better. So I have a way to fact check you. That didn't happen before. So what is not happening is like these, you know, older generation managers and leaders, like they never had to be really good at explaining the why behind something and actually teaching and coaching something versus just handing someone a script. So that's the big change that I see, is that the new generation coming into sales, you know, kids in their 20s, and I'm not much older than, you know, we're not much older than them, but they're coming into a world where, dude, could you imagine if you, when you got into sales, you could, there's like all the information now, like, there's so much, there's $5 per month Patreon groups where you can get like so much value. And when I got into sales, it was the Little Red Book of Selling by Jeffrey Gitomer. That was like, and it didn't really have a lot of how-to stuff in there. You know what I mean? Like now I can find a niche-based podcast with all of this stuff. I think that's like why it's changed the most. The other thing that I think is big too is mental health is being prioritized. So I talk a lot about therapy and like all this other stuff, but like, just telling someone to get over it, to just do it, like, that doesn't work. Like, when a dog, like, we have a dog, a toy poodle, Pepe. When you're training a puppy, or just any kind of dog, and they're scared of something, if you force them to do that and push them to do it, and they don't do it out of their own will, they lose trust with you. What you need to do is actually treat them and incentivize them and reward them through attention and through treats when they do something right that they're scared of. People work the same exact way. When you just force someone to make cold calls and just like, oh yeah, just get over it, dude, it's not that big of a deal, and you don't say, James, I get that you're kind of fearful of rejection here, I'm just letting you know that's totally normal. Like, I get really nervous when I make these cold calls, and I've been doing it for 12, 13 years. But let's talk about the reality of what's probably going to happen. They're probably going to forget you in a couple days, not even know who you are. And we can also come in with some really good stuff to say, but it's really acting in spite of that fear that we need to do, not just push the fear away and say you're a wussy and it's not a big deal. I think the mental health part of it, people have a more understanding around, and the just do it because I said so stuff doesn't really work anymore. That's the biggest thing I've see changing trend-wise, and just in my short sales experience in the last, 12, 13 years.
I think you hit on some interesting points there, and just like listening between the lines, I hear a lot of like sales culture talk. Mm-hmm. When I first got into sales, like my first, similar to you, my first gig was a door-to-door art selling job, and it was an awful job because it was door-to-door. Yeah, sold art.
To oh, business. Man.
Yeah. And it was just awful. But yeah. We'd have to do our 8 a.m. sales meetings with some like hungover 35-year-old sales manager. And every time we walked in the room, he'd yell juice, and we'd have to yell fired up, just like this stupid stuff that did not work, And I see the sales culture, and I think it gets to what you were saying, changing to be just more real and not like this like life or death mentality. And in a way, I actually do respect like that old school life or death mentality, because sales was a survival tactic for me. So, and I get that to a point, but it comes to a place where it just goes too overboard. And I think sales culture within call centers, from sales manager to SDR, has changed a lot over the last 10 years. I'm just curious to your thoughts. I've never even asked this on this show, but like, what are your thoughts on the just like general sales culture?
Yeah, I think it's starting to become a lot more exposed, So yeah. It's just like anything else. It's like there's online places where people can talk about their experience working at a company. And I love the transparency. Glassdoor is, kind of a more general version of that. But like, I forget the name of the company. God, because I could give them a little shout. But there's like review sites now just for salespeople, where they can talk about what it's like to work at a company, the range of their pay. And there's just more transparency, which I love. There's still a very like prevalent, I still see the same problems though. I see managers coaching reps that don't know how to cold call. So the manager doesn't know how to cold call, and they're in charge of training people on how to do it. So there's lack of like skill. And there's also lack of like leadership training and like how to be a good manager. So it's honestly like, it's still kind of the same kind of stuff probably going on. I think it's just more exposed, and people feel that like, hey, if I'm having a hard time in my sales job right now, like I'm not alone, because like there's a lot of other people that are in the same situation as me. And I think there's some comfort in that. So yeah, I don't know if a lot, in my opinion, just in the work that I do with company, I don't really see a lot of this like changing. It's still kind of the same kind of stuff going on.
No, that's good to know. I'm kind of, I'm removed from like a sales like bullpen or something like that. I run my own companies, and we create a culture within our company, not based off of sales, just based off of people being people and wanting a good culture with the people you work with. But I was curious to your insight on that from someone that might have a better pulse on it. The one thing I do see, just at least in content, I see the content becoming a little bit more human. And one of my thing is, I want to make B2B sales more human. I don't think it needs to be all this like tactical level breakdown of strategy, I think sales at the end of the day is based off of like a few core principles. And if you learn how to maximize those principles, you can be successful in sales. I'm curious, to someone in your line of work that's so just knowledgeable and committed to cold outreach, when did that acceptance happen? And what I mean by that is, I fought being a salesperson forever, and then I realized that's all I've ever done, and this is actually what I love. I love connecting with people. When was Jason like, you know what? I'm Jason Bay. I'm going to talk about cold outreach, B2B sales or outbound sales. This is who I am. This is what I do. And I'm just going to go forward with it. Like, when did that moment or time frame in your career happen?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I love sales from, what's really weird is I think that the way I was raised was not productive to be a salesperson, and to realize that I had a lot of these natural kind of innate things. So for example, you know, neither of my parents are entrepreneurial. My mom works in sales actually now. She didn't when I was growing up. But the kind of thinking was like, follow the rules. You know, we have rules, guidelines, you know, a somewhat of a strict, you know, kind of, and I have great parents, had a great childhood, that sort of stuff. But it wasn't like think outside of the box. I call it thinking outside of the script, actually, you know, of like what does a normal career path look like? And how is that different from people that decide to go start a business or get into sales and do something that's like not lawyer, doctor, you know, that kind of stuff. So the sales came really natural to me, man. And my best friend, Barry, I'll give him some shit right now. He was my district manager. So he was my boss. That's how I met him. So he was a couple years older than me. And what they do when they train people is you go out and do estimates together. So the first weekend I got like 100 leads, right, with me and my team. And then you set up estimates. You do 10 estimates with your district manager. They're supposed to book you a job. He never booked me a job. We went 0-for-5 on Saturday, didn't book any work. And then the next day I go 3-for-5 by myself, right? And I'm like, it just like, I loved it, you know, from the beginning. So I liked all of that stuff. In terms of specifically B2B sales and what I'm doing now, I just saw between the years of 2014 and 2016, prior to starting Blissful Prospecting, you know, I had to learn how to do outbound for B2B, you know, and honestly, it was a relief because I'm like, oh, wait, I can research people. I can get emails and phone numbers. And it's like a little more accepted than like cold calling someone like at their house. Like, this is awesome, you know? But when I started getting clients, they were like, oh, that was a cool email that you sent me. Like, can you just do that for us? You know, and like what I started to realize is that people didn't really like doing this, like I said before at the beginning. And a couple years of doing that, I was like, you know what? I actually get much better results when I teach other people how to do it and like do what we're doing, because they talk to their prospects every day. I don't talk to their prospects. That makes like folks like what you do, like that makes like your job really hard. You know, I'm like, I'm just like hats off, dude, because it's like you don't know their business. And you have to like do outbound for them. It's like, dude, it's really hard, you know? So I guess to answer your question, it was kind of a long-winded answer. For me, as soon as I figured out that like, hey, I need to get back into like the coaching and training that I did like prior to this, because I just like love that part of it, and like provide some frameworks and like a system for people to do this, that's when I got hooked. Because you know this, with outbound, there aren't a lot of frameworks. You can find a million frameworks on how to do a good discovery call or a good demo or how to close or negotiate. There's not really a lot out there on how to do good outbound. It's just pick up the phone and make it happen is kind of the, yes, kind of the way it works, you know?
Yeah. I think that's interesting. I've always loved sales as well. I just kind of accepted it when I realized like this is all I do. And actually what I never would have thought would be true became true is I actually like the cold outreach. And what we've done as an agency, when we work with clients, we work in literally one niche, and we've had to become experts in that niche. Because yeah. I don't believe like, I don't want to say I don't believe in agencies that are appointment setters that just aren't good, that work in multiple industries, because that's not true. But the lead generation world's very broken. And it's kind of the Wild West out there. So we wanted to become thought leaders, and we wanted to become industry experts in the facilities management realm, a very non-sexy industry. And we were always students. Mm-hmm. And just within niching up, it's been very good to us. And it just allows our results to be better, allows us to relate to our clients, and gives us confidence, which obviously is needed when you sell. A few last things for you here, Jason, and I so appreciate your time today. What would you say one of the biggest trends going on in the B2B outbound world in 2021 is?
Yeah, this is going to be a trend moving forward because it's getting harder and harder. I love the phone. It's my favorite tool, but it is getting harder to get people on the phone.
Yes.
Email is becoming super swamped. I think like the big thing right now is like figuring out how to like really make your point in a message like very quickly. And you can do that in a couple ways. One is like providing more visual elements to your prospecting. So for example, we have a client that helps engineering companies capture R&D tax credits. So like what we're doing with them and what she came up with is a couple of really cool things, actually. One of them was like using an analogy, buried treasure, because that's how her clients would describe tax credits. So the subject line is, hey, James, buried treasure, ? Right. And it's like this whole thing. It's like it makes really good sense. People understand that. And the other thing that we're playing around with is like visualizing the opportunity. So the data is like this. It's a pie chart and you embed a thumbnail into the email and it shows. So the pie chart is the percentage of small businesses under $50 million that qualify for R&D tax credits. 13% of them take advantage of them. And then it points to the other part. This is the opportunity, right? There's, you know, 87% of people that qualify for these don't even take advantage of them. Cool if I send over a list of activities that you might qualify for that you weren't aware of. You know, so it's like you're making the point in a more visual way. And like email is a visual medium. It's like treating it like more than words. Right. So that's the thing I think is like coming up with clever analogies or like ways to like for people to instantly understand what it is that you do or to like visually show them something that like really captures their attention. Because one last thing on this, this is kind of interesting. I did a big training call with like 150 reps and I was talking to them about visual prospecting and I asked them, I was like, who here is a speed reader? One person out of 150. And I was like, how does speed reading work? She's like, I don't actually read the words inside my head. I chunk the words, right? For those that don't know how speed reading works. The point in doing that was that your prospects are not speed readers. So when you send an email that's even 100 words, that's a pretty short, sweet email. The average reading speed, I think, is like 200 or 300 words a minute. So do the math. Like they aren't going to spend 10 or 15 seconds reading every word of that email. They're going to skim it. But in an image, they can process images in like milliseconds. So if you can throw an image in there, you're going to get an emotional reaction much faster than like a really long-winded email because your prospects aren't speed readers and they're just going to skip and they're not even going to like worry about it. So how can you make it easier for them to burn fewer calories consuming like your message and seeing if it relates with them or not? I think that's the future here for the next 2-3 years. I think that's where people need to like really be thinking.
I think that's really creative. That's really actionable. I a lot of people would be like, well, video. Videos the and it's like, well, I've gotten cold emails of video and I don't even click on them. One, because I don't know if I even trust the link I'm clicking on. And two, like I don't have time to let alone read a minute email, watch a minute video. I just, you know, I mean, and I'm not discrediting video. I do think that's a medium that's obviously here to stay. But I think what you're saying is really unique. Give them a quick visual that's understandable. It's valuable too. Just even knowing like that tax credit breakdown is probably interesting and valuable to that person that got it, whether they decide to respond or not. That's really great. I guess last thing here for me is if you were to give advice to, let's say, and I say a young sales professional in the outbound B2B world, and young doesn't have to be age. It could just be career change or responsibility change. What would your advice be to that person?
Yeah, this is interesting because this has changed recently. So my wife had me read a book because she's like, Jason, you're not a very good listener. And there's this book called You're Not Listening. And what's really interesting, I haven't finished the book yet, but there's some really good stuff in there around like active listening. You know, like hearing something versus listening. And what I found that I would do a lot is, James, you would share something about your day. Like, dude, I had the craziest day, this, and this happened. And then I would immediately respond, oh, that's interesting. I had a crazy day too. Here's what happened to me versus, oh, James, so what happened, man? Like, really thinking about, like, oh, how'd that make you feel? Like, what's going on? Like, reading between the lines. What does James need from me right now? Does he need me to be logical and, like, give him advice? Or does he need me just to listen? Like, that type of listening is so crucial, like, when you're prospecting. Because you really got to read between the lines of, like, not interested. It's very different from not interested, don't ever call me back. Like, the tonality of, like, you know, oh, you know, we actually already have something in place for this. It's very different from, you know, we have a solution in place, we're good to go, dude. Like, being able to, like, really listen to the person and ask good questions and then respond and read between the lines of what they're saying, like, that skill right there, that's the art of, like, conversation, you know? And that's something, everything I talk about with prospecting, you can practice in your everyday life. So, like, what I've really, really been practicing so much in the last, like, 2 months is, like, really, really listening to people and not just, like, hearing what you say and then responding to it. So that's the advice that I would give. Pick up that book and work on listening. Yeah.
Listening's tough. It really is. I mean, especially with all these distractions in today's world, right? I mean, I could be on the Zoom call with you right now and receive an email or a Slack message and appear to be listening, but I could be reading a message. And so I think that's really well said and probably a very overlooked step just for people in general, but it's even more critical if you're in sales. Jason, thank you so much for your time today. I guess real fast, tell me about Blissful Prospecting. Tell me where people can find you. And yeah, where can, if anyone's listening to this and they want to reach out to you or get your help, where should they find you at?
Yeah, blissfulprospecting.com is probably the best place. So we got tons of resources. So we have a podcast also. I post daily content on LinkedIn. There's guides on there. We didn't talk about it today, but we have a reply method, like a framework for the cold emails. There's all kinds of goodies that you can find there. And then if you're wanting, like, actual help, coaching, training, you can find it there as well. So we do boot camps. We have programs where we work individually, like with companies and all that kind of stuff. So if you're wanting some help, you know, applying some of this stuff and getting, you know, a second set of eyes on your cold emails or your talk tracks or whatever, check out blissfulprospecting.com.
Awesome. And we will definitely be sure to tag all of that into the show notes and throughout our promotions. Jason, I'd love to have you back sometime. I really mean what I said when I think you're one of a handful of people that just do the outbound sales world a lot of good, and I really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me on, man.
Absolutely.